Oh, frig you. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 341, recorded on February 10th, 2014.
Welcome to the 341st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 174th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jordan Lund.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, gaming flashback, and gaming history.
Right. Now, I forgot to mention this last week. I think I did mention it, but I should have mentioned it more, that I'm hyping up System Mechanic 12.5, it's a disk optimizer, especially good for gamers because it clears up, you know, because the worst thing that can happen when you're doing PC games is that it just, your PC runs like a sludge. You know, actually it happens even just when web browsing, that's a pain too. System Mechanic also is now compatible with Windows 8.1, so Jordan, that means it actually works with your Surface.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's something. Is it in the store, or is it something you download on its own, or?
I know you go to ILO.com, but I haven't tried this yet, but maybe you should check to see if it's in the App Store, for the Windows 8 App Store.
I could take a look.
Yeah, so, well, not now. We're doing a podcast.
So, I can do both. I can multitask.
Yeah, well, don't talk about multitasking. Just concentrate on this. I know that Paul likes to multitask, too. So, Paul, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Dungeon Keeper on iOS.
Oh, okay. So,
and that's all my fault, isn't it?
It absolutely is.
So, how's the experience, and how's it compare with Dungeon Overlord?
Dungeon Overlord's much better. This is just a broken experience.
Yeah. See, Jordan was right.
Somebody has some kind of philosophy over there that all gamers want from their gameplay session is like 10 seconds worth of things to do at a time.
Wow. That's not what Dungeon Keeper's about.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been checking in like every day for the last week or so, and I get like 10 seconds worth of things to do at a time. It's really kind of disappointing. Mm.
And then you have to wait 24 hours unless you want to pay money.
Not even that, because we all know I don't mind paying money, especially when it's a quality experience, but like nothing about this is motivating me to part with my money. You know, it's like I don't feel like I'd be getting any value if I gave them any money.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know that both Dungeon Keeper Gold and Dungeon Keeper 2, as well as Theme Hospital, they're all $6 on Good Old Games.
Oh, look at that.
And if you get you can get Dungeon Keeper Gold and Dungeon Keeper 2 together for $10, which is like 16% off. And
did you
of course
hear about,
Good Old Games is completely DRM free, you know.
Did you hear about how EA is gaming the review scores on Dungeon Keeper for iOS and Android?
Really? How so?
Not so on iOS, but on Android. What they're doing is you after you play it a certain amount of time, you get the little, you know, please rate and review our product, right?
Uh-huh. Well, and standard practice.
It's standard practice. It gives you two buttons. One is 5 stars. One is 1 through 4 stars. If you click the 5-star button, it takes you to the page where you can review it and give it your 5-star rating if you choose. If you choose the button that says 1 to 4 stars, it takes you to an EA feedback page saying, how can we do better?
Oh, that's ridiculous. They did make the mistake of asking me for my opinion about the game.
They sent me
a survey. Oh, man. Oh, man. I want to see the community manager on that team.
You know, there was an item that I might have included, but I didn't not want to, and that was Clappy. You know the Clappy little fiasco that's going on right now?
Clappy Bird.
Clappy Bird. Yeah.
Flappy
yeah.
Bird.
So basically, it's a very, very simple game in which you have only one option. You flap its wings, and it has to go through obstacles. And some reviewers really liked it because it's really mindless, and, you know, you just – it's like running on a rhythm. But the main complaint was that it was reusing assets from what seemed like a Mario game, right? The green pipes and all that stuff.
The green pipes were clearly from
and
Mario, right?
And it was pulled. It's being pulled. And now eBay is being flooded with 16 gigabyte iPods that have this game on it, calling it a limited edition. You know, so
yes. It's pre-installed. Yes.
Yeah. So it's hilarious, you know. And the thing is, it doesn't really take that much to program this game. It's about as basic a game as you can get. So, you know, he made his money. The guy who did this made his money, and you know, maybe he could make a similar game that's a sequel that doesn't reuse assets that look like Mario.
He was making 50 grand a day off Flappy Bird. 50 grand a day.
Yeah, but. Well, you know, that's why kids, you know, just learn to program in iOS and Android. You'll make a bundle. I mean, there's this one kid who got 2 million downloads off his very simple software that he gave away for free. Can you imagine if he did it for 99 cents? This 13-year-old kid would have made $2 million.
Well, you give it away for free, and then you make your money on the advertising.
Yeah, but if you do a 99-cent game, you know, I mean.
Right.
I mean, there are some games that are just really not even games. You know, one that just has you shake your iPod. It sounds like a can. Something's in a metal can. That's the entire app. You know, right. For 99 cents. I mean, it is. And the thing is, people don't have any buyer's remorse because it's 99 cents. You know, as long as it has a function.
As long as you like get what you're expecting.
Yeah. Well, the other problem, of course, is, you know, being able to be seen in the horde of people. You know this, Paul. I mean, there's way too many apps out there for you to be for a game. You have to really know how to market yourself in order to get to make any sort of money.
Boy and howdy.
Yeah. So what have you been playing, Jordan?
I picked up an import off Amazon for like $16. Phantasy Star Online Portable 2 Infinity. Not to be confused with the U.S. released Phantasy Star Online Portable 2, non-Infinity.
You know, we should start considering you being Phantasy Star's number one American fan.
I'm very frustrated that they haven't done the Vita version yet, and or the PC version. Both of those are out there. They've been out for 2 years, and they have not come over here yet. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, PC. I mean, is there a localized version of the PC version?
There is not, no. They're planning on doing an English version for Southeast Asia. They have no intentions of releasing it in the Western market whatsoever.
You see, but unlike a lot of things, PC games aren't that hard to find. I mean, if I go to Britain, I bought my Football Manager there. I didn't have to worry about NTSC or PAL, you know, just...
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that's worth it. Of course, you know, your favorite store no longer exists.
I think the primary issue is that because Phantasy Star Online 2 is an online-only game, it requires servers in the region where they're going to be releasing the title, and Sega is not willing to pony up the cash to get the servers up and running in North America or Europe.
Well, you see, that's why people pay for servers sometimes. I mean... I don't know if you'd pay for a server, but I'm pretty sure you might pay for a Phantasy Line Online server if it was reasonable.
And it's a free-to-play model. So, I mean,
but
if
wouldn't you say pay $3 a month if you're allowed to play it on their server? I mean,
no, I wouldn't. But what I would do is I would buy the special retail version, which is, you know, $50 in Japan.
And
I would be more than willing to pay that and play the game.
Oh, OK. So I bought Psychonauts on Steam. Now, keep in mind, this is the third time I bought Psychonauts. Once I bought it on launch. Then I bought it on Xbox Original. And now I bought it on PC. And I had to do a lot of finagling with the INI for it to show, because I was using a gamepad. And what happens is the icons they show are for the keyboard, and you cannot get the proper icons on the PC version for whatever reason, unless you change around the initial file, the INI file.
Right, right.
And some people have a patch, but when I found out that all you needed to do was do the stuff that was embedded in the thing, I said, no, I'm not going to download something with a chance for a virus. I'll just change the INI. And it worked, you know. And then I got to that part of the game near the end, and I just threw up my hands and quit, just like I did the previous two versions. I mean, and I actually complained about it on Twitter to Tim Schafer, and Tim Schafer actually responded.
Isn't there like an HD remix version of Psychonauts as well?
Yeah, it's on PC.
Gotcha.
So anyways, I did, and Tim Schafer responded, and I can tell you exactly what the interplay was. And don't you just love Twitter?
What was your complaint, and what was his response?
Okay, so that's a Firefox. Screw Firefox. Sorry. Because for whatever reason, I don't know what's going on with Firefox. ESPN and other sites are screwed up on Firefox. So
I've never had that problem.
Yeah, so anyway, I complained that, you know, get me to this, because he only responded to one of the tweets, and it was the one that was addressed to him. But, damn it. But, you know, don't you love Twitter? And there's a chance that, you know, someone in the know will actually respond to you. I mean, I got Lady Gaga to talk to me, too. So, you know, and I know that that would meant something to Paul there, because, you know, he loves Mother Monster.
Well, she's fun.
Yeah. So my first post was, playing Psychonauts again at the Meat Circus again. There's a mantra I wish all developers would listen to. Repetition is not fun. And then I said, makes me wish I could just tell Tim of Legend, which is Tim Schafer's thing, okay, I get it. Can we please f***ing move on? And he actually responded. He said that, yeah, I definitely learned a lesson about boss fight taunts in that they should stop talking after a while, which is one of the irritations, actually, because have you ever played, you know, in a boss fight, right? And you have to go through that fucking cutscene over and over again, and you have to listen to the same lines of dialogue over and over again, and it just makes you want to strangle the screen. I got it, you know. But the thing that I told him, well, the other thing is that when you have something like this, and it wasn't a boss fight, it was just a really complicated platforming sections. And I said, you know, you made a puzzle, right? And once people solve the puzzle, they should move on. They figured it out. That's it. You don't have to stress the point 5 or 6 times and then send them back to the beginning when they fail. That's not fun. Anyways, we're going to move on to Gaming Flashback. Go ahead, Jordan.
Gaming Flashback, The Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay. The Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay is a first-person action and stealth video game developed by Starbreeze Studios and published by Vivendi Games. Released for the Xbox and Windows in 2004, wow, we're 10 years past 2004, the game is a tie-in prequel to the futuristic science fiction film The Chronicles of Riddick. The game follows Riddick, the anti-hero of the two films Pitch Black and The Chronicles of Riddick, as he attempts to escape from a maximum security prison called Butcher Bay. Escape from Butcher Bay's designers focused on exploring Riddick's character in a prison break setting to differentiate the game from the film. The game's influences include the film Escape from Alcatraz and video games such as Half-Life and Tom Clancy's Splinter Cell. Escape from Butcher Bay was developed by Swedish company Starbreeze Studios and published by Vivendi Games and the Vin Diesel-touted Tygon Studios. Universal Studios Consumer Products Group granted the Chronicles of Riddick license to Vivendi Games. Both companies were owned by Vivendi Universal. The game was announced in March 2004 as an Xbox title. Tygon Studios' Kaz Lazurius said, quote, "The game features an original storyline that provides insight into how Riddick evolved into such a complex character."
I don't think he's that complex. Come on.
In contrast to other film tie-in games, which often closely follow the events of their source material, the development team of Escape from Butcher Bay focused on differentiating the game from the Chronicles of Riddick. They sought to explore Riddick's character in a prison break setting. I think that's a repeat paragraph. Starbreeze focused solely on developing the game's single-player mode and did not include multiplayer. The company believed that such a mode would require a design team twice as large and another year of development. Vin Diesel, the lead actor of the Chronicles of Riddick, provided his voice and likeness for Riddick. He and director David Twohy also contributed to the game's plot and character design. The game's story was developed in conjunction with the films. Per the filmmaker's instructions, the designers made the origin of Riddick's eyeshine vague. Diesel offered guidance to the game's lead writer during voice recording sessions. This included dialogue rewrites to reduce Riddick's lines, as Diesel believed the character spoke too often. Starbreeze intended for Escape from Butcher Bay to feature more complex role-playing game systems, but feedback from Diesel and game testers dissuaded them. Starbreeze senior producer Peter Wanott said, quote, "We tried to limit the number of really hard or really intricate RPG elements, and that was a choice because we wanted the game to be playable. Other removed features include an electric bullwhip for the guard Abbott and a 25-minute final boss fight. A PlayStation 2 version that was in development was canceled so the company could focus on the Xbox version. The game uses normal mapping, which allows detailed textures to be drawn on models with lower polygon counts. This increases visual fidelity without sacrificing higher frame rates. shots. It also featured dynamic lighting with per-pixel stencil shadowing and self-shadowing. Escape from Butcher Bay was completed in 18 months. Vin Diesel promoted the game and the accompanying movie at the May 2004 Electronic Entertainment Expo, E3. The game was released in North America on June 1st, 2004, shortly before The Chronicles of Riddick. North American pre-orders of the game included a DVD of a promotional content, such as a partial interactive walkthrough and footage from the film. The game's soundtrack, composed by Gustav Greifberg, was released by Vivendi as a free download on June 24, 2004. The PC version, The Chronicles of Riddick Escape from Butcher's Bay Director's Cut, featured a higher display resolution, additional cigarette packs, and new scenes where Riddick steals mechanized riot armor. It includes developer commentary, which details the game's creation and design decisions. Escape from Butcher Bay received critical acclaim from critics, enjoying a 90 Metacritic score. Certain reviewers preferred the game over its film counterpart and considered it an exception to the general mediocrity of film tie-in games.
So did you play this game?
I did play this game, and I can even tell you a little bit more about it that's not in the article. Starbreeze Studios, the people that developed the game, are the same developers that did one of my favorite, all-time favorite Xbox games, Enclave. Oh. And the Enclave engine was ported to do Escape from Butcher Bay. So all of the critics that hated Enclave but loved Butcher Bay really just didn't know what the hell they were talking about.
Yeah, I did not play this game, but I will say, you know, it's interesting that they removed content to make it a better game. You know,
right.
I mean, there is such a thing as feature creep.
There is such a thing as feature creep. The only bit of the game that I found frustrating is that there is an underground level completely in the dark, and you're crawling through a tunnel filled with broken glass.
You have your eye and, shine yet?
I do not recall that you had eye shine yet, and that was challenging. And then I found out that eventually the solution to that level was to play it while experiencing influenza and completely high on cold medication, and then I was able to get through that level without any problem whatsoever.
Paul, any comments on?
I did not play Chronicles of Riddick,
but you did. Did you get anything from the article? Because I did not play it either.
I might actually look into a little bit more of the tech side of it, about the polygon rendering and the higher fidelity without sacrificing performance. Because, hey, that's something everybody can benefit from.
It's a very good-looking game.
I think
they really did a very good job.
Well, it rivaled Splinter Cell from what I saw. You know, I mean, Splinter Cell was the first game on the Xbox that made people go, "Wow!" You know.
Yeah.
And this game did the same. I believe Chronicles of Riddick is still on Steam if you want to play it. If you want to check it out there, it's also available, I believe, on Xbox Originals. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they have a special edition that was for sixth gen?
Yes, they re-released the director's cut version from the PC on the Xbox 360, so it's still available.
Yeah, they had that was the one with the extra scene, wasn't it?
Correct.
They called it something different too. They called it the Chronicles of Riddick, and then they had something like Securas or whatever. You know, I forgot the name of it, but I remember there was a different title for it.
If anybody has watched all of the Riddick films, or at least the very first one, which was called Pitch Black, there's a scene in there where the youngster who's like idolizing Riddick as the big badass asks how you get your eyes like that. And Riddick says, well, first you got to spend some time in prison and then spend some smokes to get a prison doctor to do this to you.
Yeah. By the way, the new version was called Chronicles of Riddick, Assault on Dark Athena.
Right.
And it was released on Windows, PS3, and Xbox 360 and Mac.
That's correct. Yep. Very good game. Worth checking out.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's still on Steam, so if you want to check it out there. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Watch Dogs release coming in April, May, or June. This comes for us from VentureBeat. You know, every time I think about that site, images of Teen Beat always enter my head. You know, it's like you're going to see Sean Cassidy with a video game in his hand or something like that, you know?
Somebody with feathered hair playing video games.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you're a pervert.
Oh, well, yeah. Anyways, French publisher Ubisoft has revealed that the launch window for its upcoming open-world action game Watch Dogs, which is coming to Xbox One, PlayStation 4, Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, PC, and Wii U, is going to be delayed. In its latest financial report, Ubisoft chief executive Yves Guillemot told investors that the title is due out during the company's first fiscal quarter, which means Watch Dogs will debut sometime between April and the end of June. according to Jimo, our fiscal 2014 to 15 will see an exceptional games lineup with a release of five major titles, including Just Dance, The Crew, and Watch Dogs, which is scheduled to release in the first fiscal quarter. Our lineup is also expected to reap the benefits of the return to growth in the console market and the increasingly significant impact of digital gaming. Watch Dogs will put the players in the role of Aiden Pierce, a hacker who controls the city of Chicago using a smartphone. This will enable gamers to manipulate the city to help them avoid and capture enemies. It was originally scheduled for November 19th, which was going to be coinciding with the launch of the PS4 and the Xbox One, but in October, the publisher revealed it was delaying the highly anticipated game, and the Wii U version is expected to trail the other platforms. So, yeah. One thing, I don't know, I didn't even know it was being released for the Wii U.
Yeah, they were planning on a Wii U version all along.
Yeah. So this was your system seller. Unfortunately, the system seller was not released at the time of the system.
Exactly. Yeah, this was the reason to buy a next gen machine, and we're still waiting. So yeah, I don't know if this counts as a second delay because I don't think they actually announced a second release date. They just said spring.
That's a second delay. I mean, they said March. Did they say March or did they say spring? All the material that they sent out said we're releasing this in March.
Okay. So in that case, this is a second delay, which is unfortunate.
I can see, you know, this is going to be very online intensive.
It better be a good game, because if it comes out after being delayed a half a year and is mediocre, it's going to get destroyed. First off, it already has a hit going against it because it's a new IP. So they have to be, you know, way better than you would think they have to be in order for people to catch on.
I'm interested in this game, but, you know, I'm not so interested that I'm like on pins and needles for it. I mean, there's other good games that are coming out during the time period that I'm really looking forward to, you know, like Plants vs. Gardens. Plants vs. Zombies, Garden Warfare. Oh, shoot. It's coming out in a week or so. Wow. It just snuck up on me, actually. Thief. Titanfall.
Thief is going to be out here next week or so.
Yeah, I'm really worried about it because there's been a lot of executive meddling that's happened thanks to test group focuses. I mean, you know, yeah, if they're a bad idea, fine, but don't change it or else you're just going to make a bad idea worse. You know, you never fix things that well that late in the game. You know, I mean, like changing all the dialogue to remove the word f*** and replace it with frig, which is going to be hilarious. You know, oh, frig you. Come on, that's silly. I mean, even what was the name of that show? The Jim Henson Muppet, not Muppet Show, but you know, the Jim Henson Creature Shop show, Farscape. Remember, I think they said Frel or Frack or something like that.
Frack was Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, well, they said Frel then. You know, so it's like frig, really? I mean, actually, if I think about it, I think frig was actually an Old West term.
Sometimes it can be funny, you know, like the television dubs of Snakes on a Plane.
Well, oh, yeah, just monkey farting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane?
Yes.
Yeah, so anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Jordan.
Slim Vita coming to North America with Borderlands 2. Slim Vita is coming to North America with Borderlands 2 in tow. This comes to us from Game Informer. Sony has announced that the Slim PlayStation Vita that is already confirmed for Japan and Europe will be coming to North America. Europe is getting it with a bundle of indie games. North America gets it to shoot and loot. Sony announced at a Los Angeles press briefing that the new thinner Vita is coming with a Borderlands 2 bundle. The package will be coming this spring for $199. The new Vita will come with an 8GB memory card in addition to the 1GB of onboard storage. The new Vita does drop the OLED screen in favor of an LCD screen, though Borderlands 2 for Vita comes with 6 DLC packs, Captain Scarlet and her Pirate's Booty, Mr. Torg's Campaign of Carnage, Psycho Character Class, the Necromancer Character Class, Ultimate Vault Hunter Upgrade Pack 1, and the Collector's Edition Pack. No word yet on the remaining DLC that has been released for the other versions of the title. If you're a PlayStation 3 Borderlands 2 player, though, you'll be happy to know that the Vita version supports cross-save, so you can move your progress back and forth between the two versions.
Well, that's nice, but that doesn't really inspire people to buy the Vita, then. They get the, what's it called, the Vita that you, if you have a Vita, then you say, screw screw it. I have the PlayStation 3 version. I don't care. You know? Or well, wait, is it cross? Oh, it's cross. It's not buy.
It's cross save, not cross buy. Right, right.
And you know, by the way, they could include all six DLC packs because they're coming up with another six DLC packs later. It's like
exactly. Yeah. You know, I don't know that old games are going to sell hardware. I don't see anybody buying a Vita to play an old game. So we'll see what it does. I don't know. But it's hard for me to say. I don't think I would buy it.
The LCD screen is a big non-sale for you, isn't it?
Well, it's not that it's a non-sale. It's that I have a perfectly functional Vita, and the new Vita doesn't really add anything. So why buy a new Vita?
How much memory does your Vita have, though?
I have a 4 gig card in it, but I can upgrade it to whatever I want.
Wait, it's proprietary though, isn't it?
It's proprietary, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad, you know, because my Android cell phone has a 64 gig mini micro SD in it, which I'm thanking God for, because I can, you know, because I like having a lot of, you know, I had a lot of content on my iPod Touch, so this allows me to port a lot of the content that I had over to my Android, sans apps, of course, but I don't really care about that. I don't know. I mean, $200 for a handheld, I might look into it, actually, myself, since I don't own a Vita. And if it's going to come with that software, you know.
Yeah, it does come with the game and a bunch of the DLCs and stuff like that. And there are, you know, a handful of Vita games that are worth playing. I don't know that it's worth $200 at this point, simply because I don't see the Vita surviving much more past this year.
Oh, well, you know, but see... The thing is, with me, for a handheld, the best handhelds have the one game that you constantly play over and over and over again, and then you occasionally get games that you'll play for a while, but you'll always have that one game you play over and over again.
That's true, and if Borderlands is that game for you, then you're good to go.
In my case, it's Chuzzle on my iPod. Seriously, it's Chuzzle. I mean, you know, I'm bored, you know, I'll just pull it out and start matching three or four or five, and, you know, it's...
Well, here's my experience with the Vita. I've owned my Vita a little bit more than a year, and I've spent more time waiting for games to come out than I've spent playing games. The games that are out are very good games. I've played them. I'm done with them. I'm now waiting for new content. And so far, all Sony is announcing is re-releases of games that I played years ago.
Let me ask you a question. What is the replayability like on Tearaway?
The Tearaway, if you were one of the you have to get 100% on everything, is very deep. If you don't particularly care about the 100% stuff, then you could probably beat the entire game in about 6 hours.
And which are you?
I played through the entire game and I did not feel a compelling reason to go back and get 100% of everything.
But what about printing out origami?
I'm not really interested in printing out the origami, but even if I were, I can get a PDF file of all of that.
That Jitsu and Worms among first Xbox One ID at Xbox Games, and this comes to us from Eurogamer. Ninja Bee's Nut Jitsu and a mystery Team 17 Worms game will be among the first IDs at Xbox titles released. ID at Xbox is Microsoft's innovative and...
Initiative.
ID at Xbox is Microsoft's initiative to enable developers to self-publish on the Xbox One that was announced at GamesCon last year. In a tweet last night, Microsoft Studios boss Phil Spencer responded to a follower question about the possibility of Kickstarter projects on Xbox One with detail on what we can expect. Quote, I think you will with at ID at Xbox, he said, played two of the first shipping games, a Worms game and Ninjitsu, right before DICE. Ninjitsu is a free-to-play Windows 8 puzzle game from Ninja Bee, the studio behind A World of Kelflings. Team 17 has confirmed to Eurogamer its plan to self-publish Worms Battleground on both PS4 and Xbox One.
So this harkens back to Microsoft making sure everybody knew that they were going to be indie-friendly by allowing them to self-publish and also back some projects if they collaborated with Microsoft with Unity, if I remember correctly.
Well, this is a little different than indie, right? I mean, Microsoft always had indie stuff before, but you had to publish through Microsoft. This is the publisher being able to publish themselves without being forced to go through Microsoft. So, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I think it could open up many more wider range of games. I just hope that they're, games worth playing and not ports of stuff from every other machine that already has them and has had them, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Well, keep in mind, the question was about Kickstarter, so...
Right, being able to put something on Kickstarter as an Xbox One game and get funding for it and then publish it yourself without Microsoft having to sign you to a contract. Previously, independent publishers had to sign through Microsoft to get their stuff onto Xbox Live. That's no longer the case as long as they go through this ID at Xbox.
The other thing is that... Microsoft no longer has an Xbox Live Arcade. Everything's under one umbrella now.
Right.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how they differentiate.
Well, I don't know if they're going to have like an indie channel or if an ID at Xbox channel or, what their plan is. I think we need to see more stuff in the pipeline before we can know how they're going to do it. There is a big Xbox One update coming, dashboard update coming. Actually, there's two of them coming. The one like March 11th and then I think one before then. So and they're talking about doing a revamp of the interface and so on and so forth. So we'll see.
Well, a lot of stuff that's in beta on Xbox One right now will be live, and guess what? You'll have a proper party chat that's just like on the Xbox 360. You know, what's old is new again.
Yes.
And the main reason for that, by the way, is Titanfall. And yes, there was a lot of discussion that a lot of this stuff you'd had to wait until the fall.
Right.
Microsoft always do, but Titanfall is forcing Microsoft to speed things up.
Which is a good thing. We like that.
It's an interesting proposition. I'm not really sure what the vetting process is going to be. It sounds like it could go either the Apple route where everything's really tightly controlled, or it can go the Android route where really you can, it's kind of like the Wild West of publishing over there.
From what I understand, Microsoft said that they would be giving people who published before on Xbox Live Marketplace priority, but everybody would eventually do it. But they do have prioritization, who's actually been on Xbox Marketplace before.
And that makes sense since one of the developers is NinjaBee, the people that did World of Keflings. And I think isn't that the same people that did Kingdom of Keflings? That was the first one.
Yeah, they also did that bug strategy game too.
Right.
I question what the quality of these products is going to be.
I would hope there's going to be some basic QA that goes on, that they're not just going to throw these developers into the wolves and say, well,
there's
here
still,
you go.
There's still, I forgot Microsoft's term for it. What do they call it again? Oh, damn. Certification.
There'd have to be some certification. Otherwise, you'd have people sneaking stuff in that realistically shouldn't be there. People hiding a game, putting out a game that has a hidden BitTorrent client in it or something. It would happen if there's not some sort of review.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Jordan.
Pactor, Sony can't afford to pay for streamed content like Netflix does. This comes to us from VG247. PlayStation Now was branded, quote, a joke by Wedbush Morgan analyst Michael Pactor last week and now questions Sony's ability to pay publishers for content to fill out the cloud service in the same way Netflix does. Pactor discussed Sony's need for content on PS Now, adding to fears that publishers won't want to limit their own profitability by offering their games on a subscription-based streaming service. He fears that studios and publishers will lose out on per-sale income by entering into Sony's unlimited streaming model. Speaking on what the web... on what
on a webcast.
Yeah. Speaking on the webcast, he said, quote, the math doesn't make sense for the content owners. If the math doesn't make sense for the content owners, it isn't going to happen. And added, quote, so the lower subscription price, the less likely the thing will work. If it's $30 subscription price, which the publishers will embrace, then no one's going to sign up. Comparing PS Now to the Netflix model, which includes original programming, Pactor continued, quote, I don't think you could make it work. Netflix is the anomaly, the low price subscription plan with tons and tons of content. They did a bunch of really clever deals early on to make that happen, and they got big enough that they can afford to pay. Sony's not big enough to afford to pay that kind of dollars. They don't have that much money.
Well, that's true, actually. I mean, Sony is bleeding cash right now.
Sony's bleeding cash, and, you know, we talked about, I think it was the podcast, last podcast or the podcast before that, where Moody's had just downgraded their credit status to junk. But I think Pachter, as usual, has a fundamental misunderstanding of what's going on here, and that is PlayStation Now is not about getting the new titles out. PlayStation Now is about providing backwards compatibility for PS1, PS2, and PS3 titles, all of which have already sold through all the new copies they're going to sell.
But are you gonna pay to play stuff that you already own?
No.
I don't think I would, but I think there's a large segment of people out there that would.
Oh, and Paul, you buy every single Legend of Zelda version that comes out sight unseen. Come on.
That's not true. Well, no, I mean, yeah, they're new. They're each individually new games in the same franchise.
The original Legend of Zelda, I'm talking about the first one from 1985.
Oh, yeah, because how different can you make it?
I just love that reaction. No, that's not true. Well, but, you know, you have publishers out there that are not making a dime off any of the old PlayStation 1 games. They're not making a dime off any of the old PlayStation 2 games. And if Sony can deliver a revenue content stream that will allow them to continue to make money off these old IPs that are just sitting in used game stores somewhere and they're not making money off of, I think they will absolutely go for it. And that's where Pachter is off base here. He's describing it as a new content service, which is not how Netflix started. Netflix started as, hey, how about all of those old movies that you don't sell anymore? Can we stream those? And all the movie studios said, well, sure, let's go ahead and stream those. Let's see if we can make some money.
They actually started just by the discs. They didn't have the streaming.
Yeah, yeah.
Back when they started with the discs, their first major deals were, you know, picking from the recycling bin and, you know, from indies and internationals and things that couldn't be moved everywhere else. And
exactly.
So that's what caused a lot of people who weren't being served by the big blockbuster chain. You know, they had, you know, Netflix simply had more variety in those special interest categories.
And
what I find funny is that this is what Enron wanted to do with Blockbuster a couple of years before.
Yeah. Well, and you know, here's the thing, too, is that it also opens up a path to bring back IP that people have forgotten about. So, for example, one of the early PlayStation 1 games was Jumping Flash. If somebody wanted to do a Jumping Flash sequel right now, it would be impossible to do. But if the old games were playable on PlayStation Now and had a certain level of interest and got a certain amount of buzz running, they could certainly relaunch that franchise.
I'm not sure anybody's going to pay, though, for servers to play PS1 games. I'm sorry, they're not. If it's not free, they're not going to bother with it, you know, because there's that subscription barrier.
All the people complaining about backwards compatibility, and I'm not one of those people because I don't buy a new machine to play old games, but there are a large number of people that want their backwards compatibility.
Yeah, but they don't want to pay for it.
That's
the entire point. I mean, you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Vita TV. The other barrier is the technical stuff. I mean, the streaming really hasn't panned out in a big way yet, you know, in terms of reliability.
That's true.
No, you're right. It hasn't panned out. Streaming video games, I've said it before, and I said it again, and I'll say it again. You know, I just don't think the world is 100% ready.
What was that other PC service that was trying to do it? I'm blanking on the name of it now.
Well, aside from Gaikai, which was bought by... Yeah, but they also had OnLive.
OnLive, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, OnLive started to do a little bit better, but, you know, people just don't have the wide enough broadband to take advantage of it. And it sort of reminds me of this Jurassic Park game. You remember the Jurassic Park Trespasser game? From way back when, you know, did everything that the Elder Scrolls and other games do now, except that it did it then, except it didn't have the engine wasn't powerful enough to do it correctly. Sort of the same way with Ultima 9 as well, you know. Ultima 9 was basically the Elder Scrolls, but it was way ahead of its time, and technically it couldn't handle it. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next item, GameStop advertising a layaway program for the Xbox One. This comes to us from Spawn First. GameStop is advertising a very interesting promotion. They're advertising a layaway program for the Xbox One, though not for the PlayStation 4. According to GameStop's promotion, reserve and layaway your Xbox One system today with a small deposit. Trade in games, hardware, accessories, and consumer electronics to add to your deposit. Build up your reservation account over time with cash, credit, or trade currency. Buy your system and take it home with you when you are ready. The main advantage of layaway is that no interest is charged. In addition, the price is fixed. Availability is guaranteed by reserving the item in stock, and the item being purchased as a gift can be kept secret. Customers may also gain a sense of living within their means. So,
important these days.
Yeah, the idea of buying a console on layaway.
Well, that's something that Walmart brought back at Christmas time. So, you know, it's interesting to see a game store doing this.
It's a little interesting.
It is a little interesting.
Have you ever bought something on layaway? I never have.
I did do a payment plan for my predicted television set. So, you know, I put some money down and then I paid a little bit off at a time until they were ready to ship it.
Yeah, I never purchased anything on layaway, but that's only because I only spend what I have on hand. I pay my credit card off every month, so it didn't, I didn't need to. But, I definitely think that it's not as large stores still offer that. Like, it's not just a Christmas thing. Like, a lot of large stores never stop. Like, JCPenney's and Macy's, they never stopped offering that.
That's true.
The one thing GameStop does have, remember, they do accept credit, and when you trade in your games, you can put it towards the Xbox One. Yeah.
That's the interesting part. But you could trade. So basically, you could trade it in now while it's still worth something and save the credit rather than holding on to the game and trading it in later, because they'll be, because you won't get as much for your trade in. And quite frankly, GameStop won't get as much from trying to sell it to somebody else.
And also, if you really don't care about your old system, at one point you can just trade in your system and all the games for that system and upgrade from that too.
That's true.
Jordan.
Yeah, it's not something that I personally would do. I find it interesting they're doing it on the Xbox One, but not the PlayStation 4. It kind of tells me that, they can't keep enough PlayStation 4s around to do something like this with.
Or perhaps that it's basically the price point, the $400 and $500.
And it could be the price point as well.
Yeah. Anyways, guess what? We have reader feedback this week.
Or yay!
Feedback.
People actually listened to the podcast last week. Yay!
Well, I love how our readers can read our voices.
Well, the thing is that, notice that they started writing when Paul joined, And I don't know if it's Paul per se. I just think people prefer listening to a three-man podcast than a two-man.
I guess so, yeah.
No. It's clearly me.
It's clearly you,
Paul. Well, they write in when Dan is part of a three and you're not here, Paul. So,
No.
Okay, well, anyways.
I have not seen any evidence of such things.
Okay, Paul, go ahead. Take the first one.
From Arthur the Fifth, at PS Vita losing weight. I am not sure this is necessary, especially since I hear this is more of a step back for the Vita. PSP needed a slim version because it was the original was clunky and had a loading time.
It was chunky.
Chunky, like the clunky, like the same goddamn crap. And had loading time issues. Is there anything wrong with the Vita that needs fixing, especially in the UK? For me, it's a problem because I wanted to buy a Vita and it's gotten quite cheap here. The new version will play havoc with local prices. I'm not sure how this will play out.
Ooh, that's a point, Jordan, because with a new Vita coming out, the older Vita will stay at the same price or maybe even go up a little in some places.
Well, what will happen is that the retailers will mark down the old version to get rid of it and clear stock shelf for the new one.
But it's not the old version. It's just the higher-end version.
Right, right.
Anyways, go ahead, Paul. First the manuals.
At first the manuals, now this. I agree with Paul. Arthur the Fifth, you are always my favorite listener. You are a wise and discerning young man. The industry is not ready for discless consoles, and not just because people like hard copies. Major concern is that it requires a system of digital game sales on consoles that will actually work. At the moment, a digital game release costs almost twice the price of a hard copy. At £60 for the new PS3 title, from their online store as opposed to £40 for a disc. I am not okay with that. If digital stores were along the lines of Steam, this would work well. Otherwise, it would just kill the used games market and force us to buy games that at extraordinary prices. On the account of the discless Xbox, I say, meh, I will be in an alternative. It will be an alternative that no one will buy. It will be seen as lacking compared to the standard Xbox One.
And that's absolutely true. The digital games are always set at MSRP, whereas the retail copies get discounted over time.
Mm. Yep, that's true. That's true.
By the way, speaking of which, you know, the first Xbox One freebie is being released on Xbox Live. Granted, I think it's the golf game. I'm not sure. I think it's the golf game, which is pretty good for a golf game. So.
Oh, under the whole games with gold thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, the golf game that was one of the launch Xbox One digital games.
Okay.
At Resurrection of the Walking Dead, the heads of Nintendo took a pay cut because it's their fault Nintendo tanked. No one else's. In my opinion, they should have stuck the whole management crew on a space cannon and shot them to Alpha Centauri. The stubborn old fools will only damage the company further if they stay in power. This restructuring move should have happened a year ago. Instead, Nintendo carried on as usual and sunk itself in further. Now it's in dire straits and needs extreme measures. I hope that Disney buys Nintendo and makes Shiro Iwata work in one of their parks in a Mickey Mouse suit. He deserves it.
I think he'd love that.
The opinions expressed by Arthur the Fifth do not necessarily... I'm just kidding.
Well, here's the thing. Jordan, how much of Nintendo's problems right now are from, you know, the old people sticking with their old ideas?
Oh, I think all of them. I think all of their problems stem from that. I think it was last week's podcast where they were talking about the online services, right? And somebody had asked them, so, you know, do you have an Xbox One? Do you have a PlayStation? Do you know what your competitors are doing? And their answer was, no, we don't look at the competition.
Which is not a good idea.
You know what? I think Nintendo's ultimate problem stems not so much from, you know, the adherence to tradition, you know, to one's detriment in growth, but, you know, just the lack of interesting titles and new or innovative IPs. I mean, Lord knows I love me some Zelda, but they're not going to make a new Zelda every year for me to consume. They'll make one every 2 years, every 3 years, you know, at the best. You know, they need to put their money into the development of games. It is software that sells the hardware. Why do companies not see that?
Paul wants a better Kid Icarus game.
they need to do a rotation schedule like what EA has come up with, right? Where they realize that nobody's going to be buying Battlefield and Call of Duty and Titanfall in the same year. So they're splitting it up. And 1 year we'll do this game, next year we'll do the other game, the third year we'll do the other game. Nintendo needs to have that same kind of setup where this year we get Mario, next year we get Metroid, year after that we get Zelda. And then at the same point, you have your A-level games and you have your B-level games. You know,
that's exactly my problem, though. It's like you can't have just one A-level game per console a year. That's just insane.
Well, exactly.
As soon as one of them tanks and you make one mistake, then the whole year is shot.
Yes, exactly. And, well, and the other problem with that is that, you know, Nintendo has basically said, we're no good at forecasting, right? We don't know how this stuff is going to do in the marketplace. Well, you need to do market testing then. There are ways to know what the market is going, how the market is going to respond, and it's not by, you know, navel gazing.
Here's an idea. Play the game and ask yourselves, is this fun?
Well, it's not even fun, but here's an example. Nintendo's big exclusive with a third-party company is Bayonetta 2, right?
Right.
But the problem with Bayonetta 2 is that even though it was popular in Japan and it got high scores all over the place, even on the Xbox 360 and PS3, it did not sell.
Right. You know?
And the problem is that if it didn't sell on those consoles, what makes them think it's going to sell on the Wii U?
Right.
I mean, and it's not a system seller. You have to pick your spots. I mean, it might have been a great complimentary game, because I'm eager to play Bayonetta 2, and if the Wii U drops in price enough, I'll buy the Wii U just to play Bayonetta, but not as a full price system. It'll be more like if it's a Dreamcast type of purchase.
I just thought Bayonetta was bizarre.
Yeah, but that's the best part about it,
I guess.
You know, I maintain that Bayonetta is actually a man in drag. He too much of a diva to be a girl.
If I'm gonna play a bizarre game with men in drag, I'll fire up Muscle March on the Wii.
Oh God, that game. Well, what about?
Oh my God, RuPaul's Drag Race comes back in like 3 weeks. I'm so excited.
Isn't it tonight?
Oh my God. Okay, I'm done.
Wait, Paul, wasn't it tonight?
No, after the Olympics.
Oh, okay.
Everything's on hold for the Olympics. There's no Rick and Morty until after the Olympics. I'm very bummed about that.
The Olympics.
I watched Puppy Bowl, just so you know. So.
Again, moving on with Arthur the Fifth. That the question of the week has to be Crysis. The game took a nosedive once the aliens started shooting everyone, but the ending was one of the self
off the shelf. It looks like
off the shelf action movie crap. A gigantic alien mothership is attacking. I wish we had a super mega ultimate secret weapon to shoot it down. Oh wait, it's right over there. Worst part of that, the ending suggested that everything you did was pointless, and that you have to go back to the island to roll credits.
So the question of the week was, what's your best unfinished game?
Or at least that felt unfinished to you.
That felt unfinished to you, yes.
Did that feel unfinished, or did that feel poorly changed?
Well, I mean, he may have said that it felt like the ending was wrapped up really quickly. You know, like they had to wrap it up because the story was getting bogged down. So it was like,
or they were like, oh, we don't have an ending for the game. Quick, alien invasion.
Nah, okay. Well, that to me seems more hackneyed. But
did you answer this question last week, Paul?
Yeah. It was Twilight Princess.
Oh, okay, right. So here's the thing about, you know, it sort of reminds me of Jordan's complaint about Halo 2 then. You know.
Yeah, Halo 2 just kind of ended.
Yeah. Okay, Jordan, next.
From Alpha Shard, great episode, guys. At KOTOR 2, I'm with Jordan. Yay, someone likes me too.
And I picked you, the people to read these letters on purpose, you notice.
And I didn't notice that it was unfinished, only that I was an overpowered character destroying everything in my path. I also didn't find Kriya to be impressive. It just seemed like another whiny character who didn't get their way and is taking it out on everyone else. At Minor49er, or was Minor2049er, I love that you guys mentioned this game. I played it as a child and had forgotten its name. I also played Jumpman Jr. along with that one. Jumpman was
awesome. God, I remember Jumpman Jr.
It was Jumpman Jr. and then there was Load Runner. I mean,
Load Runner was also a classic, yes.
And then somebody find me an. You know what? Here's one of our listeners will always find answers to requests like this. Can somebody please find me an emulated copy of Jumpman Jr. so I can play it?
Oh, it's all over the place, Paul. I'll send you a link.
Somebody find it for me.
There's several Commodore 64 emulators out there and Jumpman Jr.'s out there. Yeah.
No, I have to go and do all the work myself. Somebody send it to me.
I'll send you a link, Paul.
At Chocobo Tamagotchi, there was, in fact, a companion app for Final Fantasy VIII on the Pocket Station. You played as the Chocobo who got it to fight monsters and collect treasures, so it wasn't too bad. It never came to America, though. At Black Isle, speaking of Baldur's Gate, what do you guys think of the chances of getting Baldur's Gate 3 Beamdog is supposed to be working on? Did the enhanced editions do well enough?
Yes.
That's a good question.
I cannot speak ill of my colleagues.
Yeah, I mean, the Baldur's Gate, but there has been a bit of a legal kerfuffle. I'm not quite up on it, but I think it might have been resolved. Kerfuffle.
I think it would have been qualified more as a hoosiat.
I don't know that one.
At Facebook Games, I find the whole pay-to-win game mechanic to be very weak, more a ploy to milk customers as much out of as much money as possible and give poor gameplay in return. I used to play Backyard Monsters, and it would constantly have stopping moments where I had to wait hours or days for things to finish building. It really can take the wind out of your sails to want to play, all the while giving the message, save on resources by spending real money. When I kept getting those messages, that tells me they don't have any real game here, just bait for you to click the pay to win. There is no real consequence to losing. You can always easily recover. There just isn't any challenge to these casual games. Another example of a terrible pay to win game is Star Trexels, which has a giant paywall preventing you from going forward until you either spend hours collecting enough dilithium or pay $15 to go to the next area. So to answer Paul's possibly rhetorical question, yes, I would rather pay for a $50 to $60 game than deal with pay to win crap. That's a good point. If you want to do a pay to win model, give somebody the option of paying $50 and removing all the pay gates. There you go.
I mean, there are some games that
straddle. That's actually brilliant.
Yeah, there are some games though that are straddle the line pretty well. Like Tiny Tower, you know, you can buy Tower Bucks, but also, you know, sometimes you get tip Tower Bucks from the residents. You know,
Gosh, my wife loves Tiny Tower.
It all comes down to whether or not it has been done successfully. There's nothing wrong with these free-to-play in-app purchase games as long as you're going to give somebody something to do in the meantime, because there's an 80-20 split here. No matter how many people you have, 80% of them will pay you not a single dime.
Well, the thing about Tiny Towers is that the delay is built into the game, so that, you know, at some point, you know, you're just waiting for stuff to be shipped to you. You know, and the best part is that the game will let you know if you allow notifications that, yes, it's come. You know, so you always feel involved, even when you're doing nothing, you put it away, you know.
Yeah, but iOS games are like that.
No, but what I'm saying is that in Tiny Tower's case, it managed to hit that mark in which you don't feel like you need to pay anything to have fun. But if you want to hurry things up a little bit, you can pay for those Tower Bucks.
Right, and that's goes back to exactly what I was saying. I mean, you don't need to pay anything to have fun. It has to be fun and be free. But you could make it even more fun by giving me $10.
Yeah, or just say, you know, right now.
That's the first part that people forget. People gotta be fun first.
I think people buy Tower Bucks just to get the elevator to go faster. I think that's about it.
And the last comment, at least Paul's
for my free shit to kick in Dungeon Keeper, which by the way is a really broken experience.
So that's why there's Dungeon Overlord.
Here's the second of the last comment. At least Paul's game Pinsanity sounds nice if you can actually win physical pins and you are supporting our Olympic team. Yay!
Yay! Plug for my game.
Go ahead, Paul. Just describe what it is so that people understand. People who have not been listening
to the podcast. Team USA's Pinsanity is the official social and mobile game of the United States Olympic team. All in-app purchases go directly to support our Olympic athletes on their search for Sochi gold.
So wait. So when one of them actually gets a medal. I mean, one of them got a bronze medal tonight. What happens? Does that pin become available? Or
yeah, actually, we just released Julia. I always mispronounce her last name. I believe it's Mancuso. She won for women's slope style, I believe. I'm not getting my pins confused. So she won bronze. So of course we, you know, just in time for people to sit down and enjoy the broadcast, we'd release that pin to help celebrate that victory, as we've been doing since the game's launch.
Well, the very first medal, gold medal that was won by an American, if I remember.
It was gold in snowboarding. I forget exactly which competition.
That was the men's version of this event, I believe.
Yes, it was the men's slope-style snowboarding. Yeah. We were very, very happy, and as I'm sure the entire Olympic team and all of America was thrilled that the first gold medal awarded at this year's Olympics went to Team USA, and we, of course, celebrated that with a free pin.
And also there is a rainbow pin.
There is a rainbow pin. It's my personal favorite.
You know, people found it hilarious that they started playing, and people sung along to YMCA at one of the events. You know, and one of the Dutch bands wanted to do YMCA, but they thought it might be too provocative until the Russians decided to play it themselves. Well, you know, all bets are off. So
there you go. And the last comment.
Hey, wants to see my rainbow pin, you know, go right ahead. I'm very proud of it. I'm really happy.
The last comment from Alpha Shard at the question of the week, best unfinished game would have to be Minecraft since they're still working on it.
Oh,
well, okay. Here's the thing. It has to feel like it's unfinished. I mean, right. Yeah, they're still working on it, but actually it's more like updates and value add. You know, yeah. When we say a game that feels unfinished, it's like, oh, wait a minute. There's
Is Minecraft technically still in beta?
No. They just add new stuff all the time. It's not empty. It's just, you know, they like to add stuff and keep adding stuff and keep adding stuff.
It's just still supported.
Yeah. When we say unfinished, it means it feels like, oh, wait, this feels like something's missing. You know?
Right.
Yeah, I think by definition, MMOs are kind of out of that conversation.
Well, I mean, you can have MMOs that feel unfinished. Final Fantasy 14, you know.
No, so, but I mean, it's still a live product, so it'll always be.
Oh, no.
As long as it's a live product. What I mean?
Original release of Final Fantasy 14 was broken. It was, yeah, and by the way, it doesn't qualify because no one had fun. I mean, that game actually dropped Square's stock 2%.
Well, because one guy sold like 27,000 shares, yeah.
He said, I'm out of here, sorry. That reminds me of a game that I reviewed, Front Page Sports Football 99. That was so unfinished, they actually recalled it, and I still managed to do a review of it before they recalled it. It was a very strange experience. So, anyways, we do have a new question of the week, and this one's very simple. It's have you introduced a non-gamer to gaming? So, Jordan, have you introduced someone who doesn't play games to gaming? And I think the underspoken thing is that they're now a gamer.
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, it depends on if you count my wife or not. I mean, she has not really, she never really saw console games. She never played games growing up. She never had the arcade experience that you and I did, right?
Now she's old.
And so, you know, seeing all of these consoles in my house, it was kind of a new experience for her. And being able to experience these games was a very new experience for her. I wouldn't say that she's necessarily a gamer yet. I mean, she's getting there. She loves her Sims.
How much does she play The Sims? Yeah, I mean,
she loves her Sims.
She's a wifey gamer. I mean, there you go.
She's a wifey gamer.
Yes, she is a wifey gamer. Yes, and she will murder me in my sleep if she ever hears this podcast.
Okay. How about you, Paul?
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. My buddy in college, his name Tom Kokoza. He had not played video games growing up. He was into, I don't know, sports or some shit. I don't know. He was into other stuff. Yeah. They never really played video games growing up. And then one day in college, I was just like, you know what? I'm sick of this. I'm here all the time. We've got nothing to do. I'm going to bring over my Super Nintendo and we're just going to, you know, while we're sitting around for 3 hours deciding what we want to do that night, I'm going to replay Zelda. And you know what? I left it there thinking, you know what? If it's around, you'll play it. And he absolutely did. He went and played Secret of Mana all by himself. I was very proud of him. And he still holds that as one of his favorite video games.
You know, I thought you were gonna say you left Super Mario World, or was it World or Land? No, it was Land because you know Super NES version, which you were exploring the thing. You had those notes.
Super Mario World. Thank you.
Super Mario World. Yeah.
Okay, so because that you leave that alone, someone's just gonna pick it up and start playing and not stop. You know. That was the crack cocaine of the Super Nintendo.
One more sword and I'll be queen of the monkey people.
You know, the funny thing is, I don't think I ever converted anybody to video games. Everybody I knew was into them to begin with.
Yeah, that was the same deal with me, really. Yeah.
But I did introduce someone into board games. I wonder if that counts.
Oh, sure. Why not?
Yeah. So, anyways, that's the question of the week. Have you introduced non-gamers to gaming? Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy our feedbacks, leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast, or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestudio.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes codes. And you heard about Paul's game, Pinsanity, which is on Facebook. Check out the Rainbow Pin, which Paul loves.
I do. I'm so proud of that pin.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, Bonds.